Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, we're talking about Wisconsin's budget impasse with State Senators Janet Bewley and Tom Tiffany. The Delta Democrat and Hazelhurst Republican talk about details that need to be ironed out with respect to education and transportation funding. Republican leaders and Governor Scott Walker have been at odds over plans to fund both items in the next two-year budget. Up first, we hear from Senator Janet Bewley. I caught up with her by phone on Tuesday this week as Republican senators were meeting to talk about the budget. First off, what are some of the things that you're concerned about as we're going forward with this process?
First, timing. I really do believe that we need to get the budget done. Everybody knows that predictability, understanding where the money is and how you're going to spend it, is an important set of facts as anyone goes forward, a family, a business, a school, and we don't have that. And getting the budget done is the true work of the people, and I'm very disappointed that it's being delayed again and again.
Well, and one of the interesting parts of this is that it's not, a bipartisan division. It's basically division within the Republicans' own party as far as why they can't come to an agreement on things like transportation or education. Can you give me an idea of how involved Democrats have been in this process?
Well, we're not involved. We are involved through representation on the Joint Finance Committee, which is heavily Republican. There's no Democratic, there's no way for a Democratic voice to have ever reached any kind of critical mass where it could get done. There's only four Democrats on Joint Finance. And of course, in the general conversations in the hall, the way the buzz around the building influences the budget, all of those things are dominated right now by the fact that most of the budget, except for K-12 education and transportation, has gone through Joint Finance and is ready to be turned into the form of a bill by the Legislative Fiscal Bureau and it can be turned into a bill. So that's pretty much done. The last two parts of it, transportation and education, we believe education is set, although Joint Finance has not voted on it, which should make a lot of school districts, superintendents, school boards a little bit nervous, because they are going to be opening their schools without a signed budget, in all probability. And then, of course, transportation. Good old transportation. The thing we have been just talking about on and on and on for years. We can't get it done. And by we, it is the Republicans can't get it done. And it's so disappointing. And now we've got this giant shiny object of Foxconn coming in. And again, we are pushing the work of the people. The state budget is being pushed aside again to look at something else. One more delay now for the Wisconsin state budget.
Well, and I want to get to Foxconn in a second, but you mentioned education and transportation. I guess I'll just start with transportation. You know, Republicans are at odds, mostly it seems like between leadership in the Assembly and the Senate versus Governor Walker and what he wants. He would rather not see any taxes to pay for this and use bonding, whereas there's disagreement in the Assembly and the Senate on how to pay for it. How do you think we should pay for our transportation needs in the state?
Well, I listen to the people of the state of Wisconsin, and they believe in pay-as-you-go. They believe that you pay for things as you go along and that you do not borrow. Now, for the governor, the word tax is something that he will not deal with, but it is a fact of life, and I think that you cannot completely hide your head in the sand and say, we won't do that, because that's completely unrealistic. The people of the state of Wisconsin have given their voice to the fact that they would expect that gasoline taxes should be indexed, and it should have been indexed a long time ago. And that is a pay-as-you-go way of funding transportation. And when the governor says bonding, he's saying borrowing. Bonding is not some easy thing that shouldn't trouble people. Bonding is borrowing, and it is quite interesting that the fiscally responsible Republicans are willing, some of them, to borrow and indeed limit what we will be able to do in further years for transportation, because we'll have to dedicate our budget, our money, to paying our debts rather than fixing our road. Pay as you go. Get revenue in a fair way now, like the people of Wisconsin want, and get our roads fixed.
Okay, and as far as transportation goes, I Governor Walker is saying things like this is going to be the most money we've spent on transportation in quite some time. Or I'm sorry, not transportation, but education. What do you make of the governor's proposal for education and some of the changes that we're seeing right now in the budget?
Well, we still have to look upon the extreme cuts that were made. We're nowhere near getting back to where we should be. So the governor can say we're spending more money than we ever had in a long time. Well, you know, we're still a starving educational system, and the amount of money that he proudly states we're spending, a lot of those increases are in for voucher schools, and voucher schools are to me is not in keeping with what we do as a society. We should provide public education for all, and do it with creativity, do it with local control, but we should not use public money for private education. You have every right to go to a private school, but expanding vouchers is going in the wrong direction. That's not something that I would want the governor to boast about if he's talking about increasing funding for education.
Well, what do you say to Republicans who argue that that gives, you know, parents more choice as far as the education that they'd like to see for their children?
Doesn't give the people in my district any choice. I mean, I would dare say most of the districts in northern Wisconsin don't have private schools to go to. What kind of choice is that? Yet we're paying. We are paying. Those families are paying for the opportunity of other people to have a choice. We don't have a choice. And, you know, frankly, we don't really necessarily want a choice. We want our schools funded. That's what I am hearing from the people of northern Wisconsin. I want my school funded well. I like my school. Give it what it deserves.
So as far as the ongoing debate, then, you mentioned Foxconn and how that's thrown a new wrinkle into the discussions right now. And the governor has called a special session to discuss this new economic development opportunity. What are your thoughts on this project and the incentives that Wisconsin is putting forward for this deal?
Well, first of all, I think we've got to get our budget done first. I'm very anxious to look at the fine print of everything Foxconn may want. But we've got to get our work done first. It's like, do your homework, get your work done before you go off and look at something else. We've got to have our budget be done before we look at Foxconn, or else if we start talking about Foxconn before we do the budget, it's going to be a matter of the tail wagging the dog. We can't make decisions in Foxconn that are going to affect the budget so dramatically. And I really want to make sure that we have a good, solid budget for the people of the state of Wisconsin before we start talking about what we're going to give away to Foxconn. Now, the other thing about Foxconn is that it is the devil's always in the details. If this will provide good-paying jobs, quality employment conditions and will improve the well-being of the state of Wisconsin's economy, I will be in favor of it. And I will be grateful for the fact that we have this chance to do something. But it's got to make economic sense, and it's got to be good for Wisconsin. And good for Wisconsin means, will it mean that someday northwestern Wisconsin is going to be able to have everything it needs to welcome its own Foxconn someday? Because right now we couldn't. The district that I represent needs to be brought up to the same standard as the rest of the state, and we are not there. I want northwestern Wisconsin to have the roads, the connectivity, the quality education, the quality healthcare, everything it needs in order to attract new businesses. And right now, we are looking at this beautiful, shiny object that is going to continue with the focus on southeastern Wisconsin. That's a great thing for southeastern Wisconsin. I want it to be a great thing for all of Wisconsin, and I want to have something like this happen for us up north. And we never, ever will until, back to the budget, we get the basic things in place, roads, schools, healthcare. We've got to have those things in place. So we got to eat your meat and potatoes before you get to the dessert.
So are you saying then that, you know, this $3 billion worth of incentives that Wisconsin is looking at offering for this $10 billion deal, that those incentives would be better spent on addressing existing infrastructure across the state?
Well, you know, you should be investing in everything. And every time you invest, you need to know, what am I going to get out of it? So, and you certainly shouldn't stop investing, or at least giving the resources that they need, the lifeblood to the north. That should not be cut in order to invest in giveaways in the southeast. Now, if we can do everything in a balanced and fair way, I would not be opposed to incentives for this Chinese company. But the Chinese company should not be driving the Wisconsin's economy or budget. The people of Wisconsin should be driving and should be the focus of Wisconsin's budget.
So what are you hoping to see then in the next few weeks, as, you know, they're continuing to have conversations about Foxconn and about transportation, education, and those things that have still yet to be ironed out?
Well, you know, again, we've got to eat our vegetables. We've got to get our budget done. We have to come up with a good, fair budget that is going to see that all parts of the state get what they need. And then we need to look at Foxconn in context with the entire state and not as a discrete goodie that southeastern Wisconsin gets to have. I mean, we can't just suddenly surge towards Foxconn and neglect the important work we have to do. I do know that the governor wants to do Foxconn first. I wish we weren't, but it looks like we're going to do a special session. We're going to put the budget aside, and we're going to do Foxconn first. I really wish that we weren't. I wish that was reversed. But I hope that we can have a fair and rational look at how we can have a company like Foxconn come to southeastern Wisconsin in a way that will benefit everybody and not inhibit the kind of investments that northwestern Wisconsin needs in order to thrive. I just see that everything is being dedicated to southeastern Wisconsin, and northwestern is just drying up. And I just do not want that to happen.
So you feel like then that northwestern Wisconsin and other areas of the state outside of southeastern Wisconsin are taking a back seat to this economic development deal?
It feels like that. That is the sense that I'm getting. Just the fact that we're doing Foxconn before we do the budget makes me feel like that is what the governor's willing to do. Put them in the back seat. And we shouldn't be doing that. We should be taking care of Wisconsin first. A Chinese company is playing a tune, and Governor Walker is saying, "What dance do you want me to do?" And man, let's do the budget first, and we can talk about Foxconn later.
Well, is there anything else about the budget or Foxconn that you'd like to touch on, Senator?
I just want things to be fair. People in northern Wisconsin are intelligent, hardworking, and they understand fairness. They know fairness when they see it. And they want a budget so that they can plan their lives, send their kids to schools that know how much money they're going to get, know that they're going to be taken care of if they get sick. They want some basic degree of predictability. And we can do that in a good budget. I don't like the budget that we've got right now, but we're not done with it. If we have an opportunity to look at some great, wonderful thing that's coming from a Chinese company, we can do that later. Let's get our work done first.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about the budget and Foxconn while you're on the road. Thanks, Senator Buley.
Thank you, Danielle.
Again, that was State Senator Janet Buley. Since our discussion, Republican legislative leaders, including Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, have said that the budget should be the priority among lawmakers. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll hear from State Senator Tom Tiffany to get his take on the budget impasse and Foxconn. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, we've been talking about Wisconsin's next two-year budget, which is now a month overdue. Before the break, we heard from State Senator and Delta Democrat Janet Buley. Up next, we hear from Hazelhurst Republican and State Senator Tom Tiffany. Tiffany, who also sits on the Joint Finance Committee, shared his thoughts with me by phone on Tuesday about the ongoing budget stalemate. I'm just curious what your thoughts are first about education and transportation and what's taken place in the last month and if we're any closer to getting an agreement in place so that we can have a budget pass pretty soon.
Yeah, hopefully we're inching closer to a budget deal and we will get this done sooner rather than later. It is disappointing that it's taken, that we've lost the month of July here and not had a budget deal done, but hopefully we are moving closer.
Yeah, and I know that this is something that's become kind of, I guess, more commonplace in the last decade or so. I guess 7 out of the last 10 budgets or so have been late. Most of them have passed in July. But as we're looking at transportation, that seems to be one of the key things that hinges on where Republicans are struggling to find common ground within their own party. Why do you think that's such a difficult issue right now?
Well, first of all, you alluded to education earlier, and I do think we're very close on education. I think that's largely a done deal between the two houses, the Assembly and the Senate. And I think we'd be pretty confident that the $200 in the first year and another $200 on top of that the second year of the biennium, I think we're pretty assured that that's going to occur. Correct. At this juncture, leadership in the Assembly wants a gas tax increase, sort of tax and fee increase. And we're just saying in the Senate that that's not going to happen, or we're not going to support that because the governor has made it very clear he'll veto it. So we're not going to pass something that the governor just turns around and vetoes. So we're willing to do a little bit more bonding than what the assembly is saying they will do. Hopefully, with the Foxconn special session bill that's coming up, hopefully that's going to kind of cut through the differences here, and we're going to be able to get to an agreement in the month of August.
Okay. Well, and I wanted to start with what you said first on transportation related to the difference between the Assembly and the Senate on how that should be paid for with the borrowing piece of it. Do you have reservations about taking out more bonding as opposed to doing tax or fee increases?
Well, I always have reservations in regards to more bonding, but I think within the context of this budget, it makes sense what we're calling for. We were, as of a couple weeks ago, the Senate was at about $700 million. I think the Assembly was saying something along the lines of what the governor had proposed, $500 million. And then the Assembly had went to the position of saying, if you're not going to raise taxes or fees, then there should be a zero increase in bonding. And I don't think that that's the place to be. Some of these projects are real long-term projects. Some of this money would go into the north-south interstate in southeastern Wisconsin, as well as the zoo interchange. Those are long-term projects. There's nothing wrong with bonding for that. What I look at is more the long-term bonding in the budget as a whole, not just for transportation, but in the budget as a whole. And as long as we keep that bonding under $1 billion, we're basically not increasing our bonding as a whole for the state of Wisconsin. So I'm comfortable with that. It looks like as of today that we may be proposing under $500 million in bonding in the Senate as a result of the proposal that's been put forth in regards to the Foxconn special session bill.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator. Could you repeat that last part related to Foxconn?
So the Foxconn legislation, which is a special session bill, which means it's a single-issue bill, that's what a special session bill is, there will be some bonding that's proposed in that for that north-south interstate between Milwaukee and the Illinois line, and that is where the Foxconn facility will be built. So as a result of that being proposed in the special session bill, we are reducing the amount of bonding we're calling for in the budget in the Senate to under $500 million. So we think that's a responsible amount to bond. And I agree with that. I think that's a responsible bonding amount for this biennial budget.
Okay. And, you know, related to education, then, you mentioned the $200 in the first year and in the second. I'm just curious because, you know, there have been some proposals or some changes that have come up related to voucher schools, and that is still in flux, as I understand it. But if those proposals were to go through, it sounds like it would increase from $43 million a year to $121 million a year or so, as to what might be paid by local property taxpayers to provide those vouchers. I'm curious where that stands, and if, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, if my numbers aren't exactly right.
Yeah, as with any educational finance question, it's always complex. I would have to review the amounts that you quoted there to see if they're accurate. The thing that I'm confident in is that we've pulled Legislative Fiscal Bureau memos who are nonpartisan that has shown that dollars do not go from our northern schools down to the southern schools. That's the main thing that I'm looking at. And actually, there's been some frustration by the voucher advocates that the income threshold is not being raised from 185% of poverty to 300% of poverty like it is in the Milwaukee and Racine Choice schools. So I would just say this budget is very good for our public schools, including our northern public schools, with more money going to high-cost transportation aid. And this is the most amount of money that's been put into schools now for quite a number of budgets coming from the state, including Governor Doyle's last budget in the 2009 through 2011 biennium, where he increased property taxes. He didn't put more money in at the state level. We are putting a significant amount more money into public schools from the state level with this budget.
And I know there's been some suggestion that the figures, the amount of money might decrease under the budget. Where are you seeing right now? Are we still seeing the same level of funding being proposed that Governor Walker wanted to see in the budget?
I think both houses are largely in agreement on the additional 200 plus 200. There are a few smaller changes having to do with some of the low revenue school districts, some things like that from what the governor proposed. But for the basic amount of money that the governor was proposing, an additional 200 and 200, I believe that that will stay intact, as well as the additional high-cost transportation aid that was proposed by the governor.
Okay. And what are you hearing from schools in your district about what they make of the plan for education funding?
They like it, and they'd like us to get the budget done.
So that they can be able to plan for the school year, which is coming up pretty quick here.
Yeah, they want to have the confidence that they can go ahead and write their budget. I mean, this will be the same with local units of government. They're at the point in the year where they're about to write their budgets, and they want to have the certainty of how much money is they're going to be able to plan for from the state. So it's, you know, it's not dire by any means, but it is important for us to get the budget done here in the next month to 6 weeks so that then they have the certainty of how much money is going to be coming from the state.
And you mentioned Foxconn before, and, you know, this has been touted as a great economic deal for Wisconsin. But, you know, some critics have taken issue with the amount of incentives and the environmental regulations that they would not have to comply with. What is your take on Foxconn and how that will affect the state?
Yeah, first of all, I have to study the special session bill more in depth. I've just given it a cursory read and certainly heard the governor's comments and others in regards to this piece of legislation. Me and my colleagues will not be rubber stamping this special session bill in regards to Foxconn. We're going to give it rigorous review, make sure it's in the best interest of the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin. This is a significant amount of incentives that we're putting out for this company. We need to make sure that it's being done in the right way.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Senator Buley about the economic development opportunity that's been proposed. And one of her concerns with that is that, you know, maybe we're putting $3 billion of incentives somewhere when we should be taking care of our own infrastructure first rather than investing it in southeastern Wisconsin. What's your take on her response?
Actually, I think that that may enable us to be able to fund that transit, that infrastructure spending that we need to do, by bringing in another good company here to the United States and to Wisconsin. So the thing I'm concerned about is I want to make sure that all the incentives are tied to them making the investment. They say they're going to invest $10 billion into their plant, and that they're going to hire up to 13,000 people. From what I understand, the incentives are directly tied to the investment that they make and the number of employees that they hire. And I think that's important that they follow through with their promises before we give them those incentives. That's one of the key issues I'm going to look at in reviewing this bill.
Is that you see the jobs first before they receive the incentives?
Jobs and the investment have to come first before the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin give out those incentives.
Basically, you know, there's some concern right now that the deal with Foxconn may be holding up the budget process. Do you see it that way, or is this two separate things?
I think it's two separate things, but I really agree with Senator Fitzgerald. He came out this afternoon and said, our majority leader, he said that we really should pass the budget and then deal with the Foxconn bill. Both are very important, but I think there's an expectation that we should be getting the budget done. There's no reason that we don't complete it. So I agree with the majority leader. It would be good to complete the budget and then complete the Foxconn legislation.
Okay. And, you know, I know you said you're going to give it a rigorous review, too, with Foxconn. I think there might be some concern that exists that if the environmental regulations are waived for this particular project, that that might lead to other developers or seeking similar waivers. And How do you think the state should address that?
Well, I just think about, for example, one of the issues I hear is in regards to wetlands. And so we have something called isolated wetlands or non-federal wetlands. And we actually are one of only a couple states that put it through a much more rigorous process than most states. And I'm hearing from people oftentimes it's really unnecessary and that it's a significant stumbling block that really doesn't get us better environmental performance. So if that's one of the changes we make, I think that's a good thing. In fact, I think we should be doing it for other companies besides Foxconn. Let's make sure and take care of those federal wetlands the way we're supposed to. The isolated wetlands, why put them through a different process than the federal wetlands? And so I think there's some common sense things that we can do there that will continue to be protective in the environment, but also allow investment to happen here in Wisconsin. Because there is no doubt that there have been instances where our environmental permitting processes get us no environmental gain, but they stop economic development projects from happening in Wisconsin. And that should not be happening.
Are you referring to the Gogebic Taconite project, or is there another project on your mind?
No, you know, I've certainly heard and seen stories of other issues. That's not one in particular that I was referring to. I've just heard of many other instances where this type of thing has happened.
Well, and I just, you know, going back to the budget then for a second, I know that I think it was you spoke with maybe WJFW and said that you were concerned or frustrated that some of the conversations related to the budget are happening among the leadership rather than in the committee. And what's your concerns related to that?
Well, so what I stated to them is that it concerns me that the committee process has stopped and some of the most important issues have not been settled. Some of the natural resources issues, education has not been voted on, transportation has not been voted on, and that really should go through the committee process. And I know, well, I believe our majority leader, Senator Fitzgerald, agrees with that. He has said consistently, we really need to get back to getting the Joint Finance Committee meeting and completing the budget process. And so that's the frustration that I was alluding to. There's really no reason that we're not completing this process. We don't all get what each of us wants. It's a product of compromise. We need to get back to those meetings with the Joint Finance Committee, have those compromises that happen, and complete the budget and send it to Governor Walker.
When is the next meeting for the Joint Finance Committee?
It is not scheduled.
Okay. When are you hoping there will be a meeting scheduled?
The sooner the better.
Well, is there anything else I'm missing about the budget or about Foxconn that you would like to add, Senator?
You know, one thing that I'd add in regards to the Senate package that we put out a few weeks ago, we restore the funding for local road aids. Governor Walker proposed one of the biggest increase in over a decade in local road aids. And we include that in our version of the budget in the Senate. It's another reason to get this budget done so that we can get more money for local road aids to our counties, towns, and cities.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Senator, especially since you're on the road today. Thanks so much for talking about the budget.
Oh, no, always good to talk to you, Danielle, and thanks for reaching out.
Again, you've been listening to State Senator Tom Tiffany, and we've been talking about Wisconsin's budget impasse and Foxconn. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but stick around, there's more to come. I'm Danielle Kadang, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kadang, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. Every year, thousands of people head to the Hayward area for a vacation, and most take time to do a little fishing. Zach Schultz with Wisconsin Public Television brings us this story on how some anglers are catching a case of humiliation in this piece about Hayward's fishing wall of shame.
Every year, more than 100 people who are hooked on fishing will get hooked wall fishing. They'll end up meeting Dr. Dale Quigley, not at the boat landing, but in a fishing hall of shame, located just across town in the Hayward Hospital emergency room.
We saw five in one day, about a week ago.
Dr. Dale is the medical director at the ER.
We do have some locals who come in, but for the most part, they're tourists.
They have boxes of old hooks removed from thumbs, necks, arms, and more sensitive spots. But some of the best lures end up in the emergency department tackle box.
This is 2 or 3 years of just the pretty lures.
This display case was built by Dr. Bob Swenson. He's retired now, but in the 1990s, he removed a lot of hooks from a lot of fishermen.
In the 90s is when the lures started getting more colorful and pricey for muskies, and that's why I said, let's save basically as many lures, but give patients credit for it by having their body part and date.
The stories have similar beginnings, an errant cast or someone fell down on their lure.
I would say the majority just maybe touch it, and then they start hurting so much that they scream or grunt, and they say, no, I'm going to the ER.
Most of them are embarrassed more than anything else that they're actually in the ER for this.
Removing a treble hook does not require much in the way of modern medicine.
It's not a delicate operation.
That barb holds tissue, and the connective tissue under the dermis is really tight.
So you walk in, numb it up, get it out, done. So we have your typical wire cutters. We have some heavier duty gauge ones. This is my favorite, actually. I call this the jaws of life. Not as big as what they have with the fire department, but it does what we need for the big musky lures.
Most fishermen come directly from the lake. Dr. Bob remembers a boy who hooked a fish who hooked the boy.
Largemouth bass and patient came into the ER with the hook on his right arm with the bass. He was holding it with his left hand.
They even weighed the bass after the hook was out of the angler and the angled.
2.5 pounds.
So, that's not bad.
Yeah, 16 incher. Yeah, it's a keeper. Isn't it pretty here, though? This is a nice place to fish.
Dr. Bob knows getting hooked can happen to anyone.
I can't feel a damn thing. So.
It happened to him just a few days after talking about his Wisconsin life. But he decided to take care of it himself.
Oh. Oh. It's a first.
I actually know of somebody who, when their grandchildren come to fish, cuts the barb off the hook so that nobody gets hooked.
Since the hooks keep coming, Dr. Bob says it's probably time to put some more trophies on the wall.
And this display case is only for a couple years, and it filled up, and I guess I'm going to build another one for me. 10 to 2 inch wrist.
Right.
It's not arm.
I'm not supposed to look like I'm shot putting.
Right.
Yeah.
Zach Schultz is a reporter for the Wisconsin Life Project, and you can find more stories like this one at wisconsinlife.org. And up next for you, we have Wisconsin Public Radio's Week in Review. A federal appeals court ruled Tuesday that the gray wolf should remain an endangered species in the western Great Lakes states. The ruling backs a 2014 federal judge's decision to keep the wolf protected. The Interior Department removed the gray wolf from the endangered species list in Great Lakes State 6 years ago, but a federal appeals court has ruled regulators failed to consider the impacts of delisting in just some states. Wolf advocates like Melissa Tedrow are celebrating the decision. The Wisconsin State Director for the Humane Society of the United States says the ruling should slow efforts in Congress to strip federal protections for wolves.
Mainly because the reasoning of the court was so intricate and truly hard for any serious-minded policymaker to ignore.
A bipartisan group of Wisconsin lawmakers support legislation that would delist the wolf. Republican Congressman Sean Duffy is urging the Interior Department to appeal the decision. Business leaders in Superior have proposed a development plan to make more than $100 million in improvements to Superior's downtown. The so-called Better City Superior project would join Milwaukee in its creation of a special tax district. But as Felicity Bosk reports, the project hinges on approval from state lawmakers.
Superior residents overwhelmingly supported a referendum to create an exposition district in the city in last November's election. The district would create a tax on food, beverage, and lodging. Now it's up to lawmakers in Madison to decide whether to approve the special tax district for Superior. Senator Tom Tiffany is a Hazelhurst Republican who sits on the Joint Finance Committee. Tiffany says he is hopeful but cautious about whether Superior's plan will be included in the next two-year budget.
The proposal is in limbo, like a number of other proposals that are being considered for the budget, and it's just a matter of us getting to the end game on the budget and deciding exactly what's going to be in there. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to insert this.
Better City Superior President Bruce Thompson says the project would include construction of a convention center downtown. He says they want to offer entertainment to attract tourists from the Twin Cities area and beyond.
Our downtown landscape needs to have some entertainment district action, some new assets. We have talked in terms of a major water park, a large indoor facility, turf facility, an indoor skydiving facility could be an alternative for the water park or could complement the water park either way. But until we have the ability to pull in developers and put, you know, the pieces together that they would actually do, we don't know what the final look will be.
But Thompson says the project is vital to the city's economy and Superior's ability to attract and retain residents.
If we're successful and the state allows this for Superior, then I would say it would be within 2 years we would probably have the start of some projects. In 10 years from now, you probably wouldn't recognize downtown Superior.
Republican Senator Tom Tiffany authored the amendment for the exposition district that may be included in the next two-year budget bill. Wisconsin lawmakers have missed the July 1st deadline for passing a state budget. Legislators continue to debate transportation funding, among other items. Lawmakers haven't had a budget in place by July for 7 out of the last 10 budgets. Felicity Bosk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Passenger cruise ships will once again call on the Twin Ports. As Elizabeth McMahon reports, the Twin Ports haven't seen a passenger cruise line in more than 3 years.
Miami-based Victory Cruise Lines will be gracing the waters of Lake Superior next summer, according to President and CEO Bruce Nirenberg. He says customers are looking for tours that are safe, exciting, and close to home.
Because traveling internationally is not quite as convenient and as attractive as it has been because of everything from terrorism to the way the air travel is being managed. So staying close to home is a little easier on people.
Adele Yorty with the Duluth Seaway Port Authority says these cruise tours of Lake Superior and the lower Great Lakes target more mature customers.
Those who have the time to spend on 9, 10, 12, 14-day cruises, they're looking to learn about the culture, the history of a region. I think these days, many of them are looking for a safe place to cruise. We've been hearing that a lot coming inland here in the U.S. And there's a lot of unexplored territory, some of which I think those of us who live here may take for granted. But when you cruise the north and south shores of Lake Superior, the scenery is breathtaking.
Yorty says the cruises are a valuable tourist draw for Duluth Superior. She expects the hundreds of people taking part may attract more visitors to the Twin Ports through word of mouth. Nirenberg with Victory Cruise Lines says their tour packages start at $5,500. Elizabeth McMahon, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Superior City Council narrowly approved this week funding about 25% of the cost to kickstart a bike share program in Superior. As Felicity Bosk reports, councilors also voted down transferring additional funds from the city's oil pipeline terminal tax to balance next year's budget.
Superior Mayor Jim Payne has been working to bring the bike sharing company Zagster to the city. A few weeks ago, the Finance Committee voted against a measure for the city to provide public funds for the initiative. But Mayor Payne says the city councilors voted to contribute a quarter of what's needed to support the program.
It could end up being much smaller than 25% if other members of the community get on board. We're going to have four stations. The City of Superior will sponsor one of those.
City officials plan to pursue private sponsorship to fund the remainder of the investment. The bike share program would cost $36,000 for four stations and 20 bikes. Revenue from the bike share program would go to the city. The Superior City Council also considered whether to transfer an extra $200,000 from the city's oil pipeline terminal tax to the city's budget. The tax assessed on Enbridge Energy's terminal in Superior draws in more than $4 million each year for capital improvements. Finance Director Gene Vito says they wanted to use $600,000 of tax revenues for the budget next year instead of the original plan to use $400,000. Vito says they now have their work cut out for them to balance the budget.
By increasing it from the $400,000 to the $600,000, I think that's where the counselors were getting concerned that that was going to take more money out of the capital improvement program budget, because that's where the funds are currently slated to go.
The city council also approved extending the city's lease agreement with Sailboats Incorporated. The company will continue to operate Barker's Island Marina for another 14 years. Felicity Bosk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
In state news, Walker administration officials are speaking out in support of a $3 billion deal to lure tech manufacturer Foxconn to Wisconsin. During the state assembly's public hearing on the tax incentive package, Department of Administration Secretary Scott Neitzel said Foxconn will help keep talent in the state.
This opportunity will produce a Wisconsin brain gain, which will end our brain drain. We cannot let this opportunity pass us by.
The manufacturer could provide up to 13,000 jobs in southeastern Wisconsin. Democrats said they still have many unanswered questions about the deal. They want more information about when incentives will be paid out. They're also wondering how much local governments will have to invest in infrastructure if Foxconn builds in their community. A new bill creating a gun class for public schools is being touted for teaching firearm safety and providing an activity for high school students who aren't interested in traditional sports. Critics question whether it should be part of the curriculum. Shemaine Mills reports.
Under the bill, the Departments of Public Instruction and Natural Resources would develop a four-credit course focusing on the safety, history, and science of guns. It does not require schools to offer the course, and no live ammunition would be used. But Verona Democrat Sandy Pope Roberts asked the bill's author if anything stops students from bringing in ammo, prompting a testy exchange with Franklin Republican Ken Skronsky.
What prevents that in your bill?
Well, Representative, what prevents them now to walk in the stool with that? Could you answer that?
It's against the law, but the gun isn't provided in the building.
The bill received a public hearing Thursday before the Assembly Education Committee. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A $650 million bridge linking western Wisconsin with the Twin Cities opened to the public this week. As Rich Kramer reports, the completion of the mile-long St. Croix Crossing caps a decades-long battle between the river's environmental legacy and the need for better infrastructure in one of the fastest-growing parts of the state.
One, two, three.
It's opening day for this towering span of concrete spires draped with thick white cables. On a stage in the middle of the eastbound lanes, a group of strange political bedfellows cut a red ribbon celebrating the bridge's completion. Republicans Governor Scott Walker and Congressman Sean Duffy were seated next to Democrats Congressman Ron Kind and Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton. Walker called it a striking example of the bipartisan support for a link connecting St. Croix County with a straight line shot into the Twin Cities.
This really is cooperation. This is cooperation between federal government, state government, local government, between the private sector and the public sector, between Minnesota and Wisconsin.
The crossing has five concrete piers with cables holding a roadway 110 feet over the St. Croix River. It replaces a cast iron two-lane lift bridge built in 1931, often in disrepair. Some local commuters would say the Depression-era structure was in such bad shape they'd unbuckle seat belts and roll down windows to swim out in case of collapse. It took supporters more than 20 years to get the St. Croix crossing. Many at the ceremony gave credit to a New Richmond banker named John Soderberg for lobbying endlessly for it.
I started over in Wisconsin going up and down and saying that we need to do something about this bridge. And at that time, Minnesota had not said anything. And then after a meeting in 1992, they said, can we join you? And I said, yes, the more the merrier, and there's going to be a lot of work with it.
That proved to be an understatement. The St. Croix is federally protected under the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, so when plans for a replacement bridge came out in 1995, Minnesota's North Star chapter of the Sierra Club sued to block it. Then a mediator was brought in, and a group of 28 stakeholders began hashing out differences. But Minnesota Sierra Club Director Margaret Levin says their smaller, more environmentally friendly bridge designs were dismissed.
We felt that those options were never really taken seriously. And so we saw through the process the continued proposal for a large highway expansion, which is how we view the St. Croix Crossing.
The group sued again in 2007, putting the St. Croix Crossing on ice once more. Frustrated, supporters went for a long shot. If they could get a congressional exemption, bridge construction could begin. After intense lobbying, the St. Croix Crossing exemption won unanimous approval in the Senate, and in February 2012, Republican Congressman Sean Duffy made the case to the U.S. House.
There is no appropriations aspect, there's no budgetary authority. All we're doing is deeming this bridge consistent with the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act.
The House voted overwhelmingly for the project, and President Barack Obama gave his signature days later. By comparison, the 5 years of construction seemed like a flash in the pan. From the shores, residents eagerly awaited its opening, as did building contractors in Wisconsin. Eric Allen of New Richmond says the anticipation of a new bridge and an improving economy have driven home building in the city.
Compared to a couple years ago, it's probably 10 times the amount, you know, new construction.
8 hours after the St. Croix Crossing was dedicated, it opened to traffic. An air of excitement hung over thousands of cars creeping along the well-lit deck in bumper-to-bumper traffic. John Soderberg was asked what he'll do with his time now after spending 20 years pushing for the bridge.
I don't know. If I said I wanted a glass of brandy, that'd be all right, wouldn't it?
That'd be all right.
Okay.
Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This has been Wisconsin Public Radio's Week in Review. I'm Danielle Kading, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/KUWSFM. And you can find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. We hope to have you back again with us next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.